That's great.
Mutual friend. Who is mine first? Except for when he's scratchy and mean and shit.
So much. Today is February 28th, 2017. This is a Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is a continuation of our public hearing on House Bill 5026, the Oregon Health Authority Public Employees Benefit Board. Today, we have Director Loretz and Chair Fairbanks from the PEB Board. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
E announcer.
Please begin. Actually, Ms. Ames, before we begin.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I did want to remind you PEB is one of those places in state government where we have this double count. So their budget is other funds, but that money comes to them from every agency, wherever there are personnel costs, and it starts out as general fund, lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds, and then when it goes to them, it all becomes other funds. And they're going to have more information on that, but because we talked about that in orientation, you can get that in your heads for, and OEB works the same way, except the money's coming from school districts.
Thank you. Please.
Hey, Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Loretz. I am the director of the Public Employees Benefit Board, Colin PEB, and Oregon Educators Benefit Board. And I have with me
Mark Fairbanks, CFO for the Oregon Health Authority and chair of the board.
And Ali Hassoun, the PEB director of operations.
Okay, we'll get started. PEB and OEB cover about 300,000 lives, 270,000 lives. Total, that's about 6% of our total population here in Oregon. We are in all 36 counties across the state. We have our goals to improve health and of our members with fully preventive services, wellness programs, and enhanced care. We strive to advance the healthcare transformation through coordinated care model, which we have those in both the PEB and OEB organization. And of course, we strive to contain costs as we move forward. We have been modifying our carrier and vendor contracts through time so that we do have regional systems of care, coordinated care model type plans. We encourage provider quality measure reporting at the vendor level. And then we also collect quality metrics that we've just started to collect. And we collect the same metrics that the CCOs collect. We do contract with health systems for accountability in their performance. We encourage them to have increased use of decision support tools on all of their websites for our members. We share responsibility for health with our members, the vendors, us, of course, and the providers. We measure performance of our vendors, like I said, through the metrics. And now move on. Okay, we do have a strategic plan that includes the advancement.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to actually ask you to go back for one sec, or maybe it's kind of a joint question between these two slides. I see your point about the quality care, about the coordinate care model, but does that include promoting spending on primary care? I mean, the primary spend report that just came out from the health authority shows PEB and OEB at the bottom of the pack in terms of percent spend. It's only about 6% of premium, or the equivalent of premium. So what's the deal with that, given the evidence we have that increased spending on primary care improves health and lowers costs?
Co-chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee, I think there's a couple of things going on there. We do participate in the CPC Plus, and we participated in the CPC before that. We promote patient-centered primary care homes, and our vendors do pay a per member per month to primary care PCPC ages that are recognized by OHA. But the majority of our members, or not the majority, but 41% of the PEB membership are in a PPO plan. So there's no requirement for them to utilize their primary care physician prior to using a specialist. And on the PEB side, or on the OEB side, looking, 72% of those members are in a PPO-style plan and not in a coordinated care model plan. I do have a slide later on showing how members are slowly moving to coordinated care model plans, and hopefully that will help moderate that. We are very aware that we have a very low primary care spend compared to the CCO plans, and we have been talking to the plans about that.
Yeah, but you have a low spend even compared to some of the commercial plans. I mean, that in other standard, I mean, I guess there are ways to structure the plans, even when they're PPOs, to incentivize people to use primary care more. I mean, I get that it's tough to change patterns, but I think that you have some avenues open to you, perhaps, that could and should be explored. And if you need legislative direction on that, we're happy to help. I'm not trying to belabor the point, and I want to be crystal clear, just in case anybody's worried. I'm not talking about this as a primary care physician. I'm talking about this as a policymaker who recognizes that the best evidence suggests that when you increase spending on primary care, you improve outcomes and lower costs. So I'm just coming at it from a policymaker's perspective.
So it's true that on our PPO plans, we do not have a variation between member copay for primary care or for specialists. We don't have that on the CCM side, but that's because referral is required.
Right.
So it doesn't make any sense on that side, but I agree on the PPO side. That's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
PEP and OHIP both have value-based benefits, and this means that we have lower cost share for effective treatments. We have lower and actually no cost chronic care visits for people that have coronary artery disease, congestive heart failure, asthma, and diabetes. And as we all know, because adherence to their protocols for these conditions keeps members out of the ER, the emergency department, and out of inpatient services. And we also have what we call a value-based formulary, and that is a whole list of medications that have no cost and no deductible, and these are for things like asthma, diabetes, depression, high cholesterol, things like that. It's pretty extensive. So to balance that, we have services that come at a higher cost, and these have tend to have higher costs in general. And so we have an additional copay for our members for advanced imaging technologies, sleep studies, upper endoscopies, and there's also some surgeries such as total joint surgeries that have an additional cost to them to entice our members, encourage them to try other options before they move these.
One of the questions that I had is
sure.
It said hold growth at 3.4%. I was familiar with that PEB was supposed to hold growth at 3.4%. I was not under the impression that OEB had to hold the growth at 3.4%.
Co-chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee, no, that was included for OEB as well.
Okay.
That we are striving to hit the 3.4%.
Striving. And so I guess how has that been coming?
Well, there's a slide a little bit later on, and it is we'll show you how we've been doing.
Okay.
And we've been doing actually pretty well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yes.
And then Representative Beeler, you had a question.
Okay. Here's our organizational chart for PEB and OEB. As the PEB and OEB director, I support the boards and also manage staff. I report to both chairs and to OHA. We have blended our staff at the staff level. We blended members in PEB and OEB in the finance and contract areas, so they work as one. In other areas such as program development and communications, they work side by side and support each other during their heavy seasons such as open enrollment. PEB and OEB each have their own enrollment and eligibility system, so our member services are not combined. However, they do support each other again during open enrollment, which is they're different time periods and they are very busy. PEB has 19 positions total, and OEB has 20. This chart highlights the total cost PEB pays per employee. This includes self-insured plans, are fully insured premiums and other taxes and fees. So it's important to remember that this is what PEB pays out. We'll talk a little bit later about PEB's incoming, but this is what we pay out. PEB and OIV have both been faced with the same challenges as everyone else for the past 10 years, and that's how to moderate rising costs. In 2010, PEB went self-insured, and so from 2010 on, we've been able to keep the rates pretty moderated until 2016. It has gone up. We use the self-insured trend model because the majority trend instead of a fully insured trend because the majority of our members are in a self-insured plan. Later we'll talk, like I said, a little bit closer at how employee benefits are budgeted from the agency side and how the member selection affects our costs going forward. You can see there's a huge drop in 2012 in the amount of money that we paid out. And in 2012, the board added deductibles, which PEB members never had before, a higher out-of-pocket maximum, as well as the additional cost tier. So we did see a reduction there just based solely on plan design changes that the board made.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, please.
If you had to put your finger on one or two major cost drivers, what would you say those are for PEB and OIV?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Rayfield member of the committee. I would say we do have some specialty drug costs, which it's not hepatitis C. We have a very stable population, and our top medications are for MS, rheumatoid arthritis, things that will go on forever and ever. They're not curative, the treatments. And we have seen an increase in the use of emergency department, which is a new thing for us. And not quite sure what that is. We do know that there's emergency department utilization is really high with the 18 to 26-year-olds for stomach aches. So we've joked that we need a mom app, that as you fledge from the home, a lot of these kids may not actually know how to access care if they're not in their hometown. If they're going to school in Massachusetts, they may not know how to get that. So we're working the plans to come up with maybe a toolkit for parents with kids that are 18 or 19 on how to help them get the video app, how to find a care provider in the hometown or in the town where they're going to be, and things like that. So those are a couple of high drivers for us.
Thank you.
Representative Bueller.
What are you projecting your rate change will be in 17 and 18?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield members of the committee, thank you for that question. Right now, we've just started our renewal process. We've had the first volley. Some of the rates are coming in quite high, from 11% down to 6%. So, and those are for the fully insured plans. The self-insured plans, we have not calculated those premium rates yet. But the board has not started to actually do any work on how to get them down. They have just received the initial renewal. So we're just starting to do the work.
Please.
And what would that do to your projected reserves if you have those kinds of rate increases over the next couple of years?
Well, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, thank you. We haven't used our stabilization fund to moderate rates to date. We can use that for our fully insured rates. For self-insured rates, but we've never used it for fully insured rates. Hopefully, we won't have to do that. The goal is to get the rates down using other methods, such as we can change plan design. We can do a variety of other things as well.
Help me understand what value PEB and OIV present to, say, Bendel Pine School District.
Representative Bueller, co-chairs, members of the committee. I believe that the rates are, and the rates that are available to Bend La Pine are actually for the benefits that are available, really quite good.
I think they would dispute that.
Okay.
Corvallis is in the same place.
Yeah. In fact, I know they would dispute that.
Well, we have our rates tend to be stable for one thing. You have a larger pool, so if you have a small school district, one of the risks you run is that you'll pick up somebody that has a chronic disease or something that is extremely expensive that ruins your experience for the following year. So there is safety in numbers. We do offer that. We offer a variety of plan designs for our school districts to choose from, including HSA eligible plans and some that have lower deductibles. So there is also a choice that is provided for your members.
Please. Why don't we provide choice to school districts to opt out of OEB?
I believe that's a statutory
change. Name, Mr. Chair.
Please.
There's a long backstory behind that, Representative Bueller, and it has to do with the transition over to OEB in 2008. Mm-hmm. And at that time, some school districts were allowed the opportunity to opt out, but it was kind of a now or never proposition under the theory that there was strength in numbers, as it were, and some school districts did opt out at that point, Beaverton, for example, one of my districts, and some did not, and that got reconsidered at some length in the 2013 session, I believe. Somebody help me out here. Well, I guess Sarah and I are the only ones who are actually here then, but it was not considered the right thing to do at that point to make that change. I think this has been an ongoing discussion, and I don't know that we can't have it again, but there's a significant backstory to that.
Yeah, and Senator Gelzer, I think, has
one. Yeah, I mean, I hope that we can reconsider the discussion, especially given the constrained resources that we have for our schools right now. One of my school districts, Corvallis, has talked to me about this at length for years, and they've had the opportunity to see the difference because they've had some sections of their personnel in and some sections of their personnel out, and what they have been able to negotiate on their own is much better. And they told me that if they were able to opt out of OEB and go onto the market on their own, the annual, so not biennial, but the annual savings for Corvallis is equal to about 20 teachers. The combined savings would be nearly $9 million, which is enough to build the new elementary school that we need. So that's not a modest problem for my district that is pretty constrained in resources. And I know I was actually here when we voted for OEB in 2007, and I struggled with that vote. I'd come off of a school board. My district was very concerned about it. I was promised that if it was a problem, we would step away and my district would save money. That has not happened. Our district has been one of the losers in the process.
Representative Bueller.
So if the theory and the driver for doing this was that there was strength in numbers, and that theory has not, there's okay to experiment, but if the experiment has failed, why do we keep on doing this?
Some of this policy is probably meant for another committee rather than the budget side of things.
And it's scheduled in Senate Ed. Yeah. There's two bills that are scheduled to allow districts out.
But it is a good question.
And it's relevant to this committee in the sense that it affects the budgets of, not necessarily, I mean, yes, to some extent, OEB and PEB in and of themselves, but also our colleagues in the education sub have a significant stake in this. So, thank you.
I'm a little frightened to present this one, but this is OEB's cost trend as compared to commercial trend. It highlights OEB's cost per employee, and OEB, all of their plans are fully insured, so these are the premiums per employee paid year over year. You can see the trend rate for the commercial lineup is up above, and OEB has been below that year over year.
And what's the difference between, I guess, the risk pools and PEB and OEB, and why the rates, the increases are lower in the OEB trend?
You know, I don't think that the risk pools are that different per se. I think that, again, there are differences in the plan designs that drive a lot of the differences. PEB's plan doesn't We offer two plan designs, basically, and three if you count the HMO. And OEB has a lot of variation in their plan designs, and that affects that as well. And who goes into which plan drives a lot of the costs.
There's just, pretty significant differences. So.
Yeah. The next two slides show PEB and OEB's health as self-reported through the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, which is a survey that PEB and OEB have been using every other year for a long time. It is based on a longstanding survey designed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So our smoking cessation rates are really great. They're way below the averages for for Oregon, way below. both PEB and OEB, all of our plans continue to have smoking cessation programs available for people that haven't quit yet and would like to. So those are available. This slide shows our obesity rate. It has taken a jump up considerably from 2 years ago. So our rates for many years, this is the first time they've been above the national average. We're not sure if it's related to the sample, since it's a small sample compared. Since 1 point doesn't make a trend, we're hoping that this was an anomaly. But we do have available in the interim, we have Healthy Team, Healthy You for our members, which is a team-based at-work program that works on things like sleep, exercise, nutrition. We have Weight Watchers available to our members. Our plans all have health coaches, and we have diabetes prevention programs available for people who are pre-diabetic to help them not become diabetic. And the diabetes prevention programs also focus on exercise, nutrition, and diet. We offer a variety because different plans work for different people. So now we'll just take a look at PEB alone. PEB's board is made up of 4 voting members that represent management and 4 voting members that represent labor. We also have 2 advisory members, Senator Betsy Johnson and Representative Mitch Greenlick, that serve on our committee. We design and contract for health plans, group policies, flexible spending accounts for over 130,000 Oregonians. These are in state agencies. We have the university system, as well as lottery and semi-independence. Semi-independence are boards, commissions, CRIB commission, things like that, nursing board. We also have retired.
I'm so sorry. So when the universities went into semi-independent a few years ago, they didn't pull out of PEB to go self-insured. They stayed in PEB?
Correct.
Okay. I thought they would pull out.
Not by choice.
Is it? Ribbon of page.
Thank you, co-chairs. On that point, I believe that universities were allowed to do their negotiating for all sorts of services, including health insurance, and then separately there was a bill that brought them back in before the time frame that they were going to be able to do that. Have you done any cost analysis on what that costs them to be in versus their projections of being out?
We have not. We have not been asked to. Either.
Can we ask you to?
We can talk about it.
So PEB's composite rate is developed every year on an annual basis, and it is a weighted average of the cost of employees enrolled in medical, dental, vision, and basic life insurance. We consider those core benefits. And this number is used for budgeting purposes only. This chart shows the history of our composite rate since 2011. Every year, the board goes into negotiations, and like I mentioned earlier, that's where we are now. We've received our first renewal numbers from our plans, and they will work with the plans to come up with the premiums for and the plan design for the following year.
Is this for just a single employee, or is this with dependents and a family? Like, what's that rate represent?
Co-chair Steiner Hayward and Ray Field, members of the committee. It is per employee. So this number, let's take 2017, agencies receive $1,416 per FTE. And this is to be used for people. It's a weighted average. So the idea is that if you have a normal distribution of employees and employees with families, that over the
that
it'll cover.
Sense.
Yeah. So it's important to remember that this number, earlier we talked about what our PEBS costs were on slide 5, and this is, on slide 5, that was the money that we paid out for claims. This is a budgeting number, so they're different and complicated. So the composite rate is what the agencies use when they're building their budgets going forward. On slide 5, since it's cost-related, if there's any sort of an anomaly that happens, we get a child that has a unique hemophilia or bleeding disorder or something like that, our costs go up, and that's that can affect our overall spend rate, which is at 7% now. But the composite rate is a set amount that is will be determined by PEB and pushed forward. So this number does not fluctuate in the same way that our costs fluctuate. We'll talk a little bit later about how the money flows, and that should be helpful. And this is just a graph showing what the composite rates look like over time, over the last 15 years. Again, in 2010, we went self-insured, and then again in 2012, we had a big dip because we made those plan design changes, and that really brought our rates down. A self-insured plan gives PEB the flexibility in our plan design and to meet the goals that we have set, and it also helps us to keep rates down.
Thanks, Representative Bueller.
Can you explain why PEB has to make $15 million in tax payments to the federal government in 18? What's the origin of that?
Sure. Co-payment Steiner Hayward, Rep. Rayfield, and Representative Bueller. There's $120 million is going to be taken out of our stabilization fund and moved into the salary
general fund.
Into the general fund. And part of that money originated as federal dollars. And so the federal government is asking for will be asking for basically their portion back is a way to look at it. It's not actually a penalty.
Wait, I'm sorry. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
So it's cost allocation. So if federal dollars are used to pay for state employees, then in theory a percentage of that money goes to pay for that employee's benefits, and the federal government is saying, we don't want to pay for your employee's benefits, so you have to give us that money back?
I think they're looking at it as maybe excess money that was, if we're not going to be using it for benefits, then the money needs to go back. That was the intent of the
So it's money that ended up in the stabilization fund, and mm-hmm. the federal government is saying, well, if you're not actually using it, then we want it back.
Yep.
Got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. PEP core benefits include medical, dental, and basic vision. Our medical plans, all care, Kaiser, and Motor, are fully insured. This means that we pay them a premium per employee every month, and they accept all the risk for that. We also have Providence Choice in the PEB statewide plan. These are self-insured plans. We pay Providence a monthly administrative fee, and then PEB pays for the cost dollar for dollar. On the dental side, we have Kaiser and Willamette Dental that are fully insured plans. Delta Dental is self-insured. And Vision, we have a mixture as well. Kaiser is fully insured, and VSP is a self-insured plan. Our employee assistance program is provided by Cascade. And these, the premiums for core benefits are shared between the employee and the employer. PEB also has optional benefits available, life, accidental death and dismemberment, long and short-term disability, and long-term care. We have flexible spending accounts for health care and dependent care, which is a great way for our members to save on their tax liability. Commuter accounts for parking and transit costs, also a great way for our members to save on their tax liability. Premiums for optional benefits are 100% paid by our employees. There's no employee share or employer share. It's the wrong way. Sorry about that. All right, now I'll talk a little bit about the budget. PEB has an operational budget that is shown here as the light green, and we use that to pay for our PEB personnel, our supplies, rent, IT, consultants, things like that. It's about 1% of our spending. We also have a rate stabilization fund, and we collect money there for payment of premiums for both self-insured and the revenue can be used for is for fully insured premiums, self-insured claims, and the revenue can also be used to stabilize premiums if needed. We have a reserve that we maintain, and this reserve is kept so that we can be self-insured. The balance is $340 million, and that's before the $120 is taken. So we'll be down to $220 after May, and this reserve is held just in case we do have a run on the bank, so to speak, in case we have a catastrophic event that would require us to pay more claims than we had budgeted for. . 100% of our funds are counted as other funds, and our total biannual budget is $1.9 million. We're going to talk about the funding inflows, the way that PEB gets its money now. The agencies are budgeted using the composite rate that we talked about earlier, multiplied times their FTE. And when an employee enrolls in benefits, the agency will send the premiums, their share of the premiums, to the payroll departments. Payroll departments then collects also the employee portion of the payments and sends the money on to PEB. So they do not send us the composite rate. They get a composite rate into their budget, the green part. What they send us in the blue is the actual premiums for whatever selection you have made for your benefits. So they would send us the MOTA premium for your medical and MOTA for dental and VSP for vision as an example. Our revenue growth is capped at 3.4, as the same with our allocation is capped biennially at a 3.4 growth rate.
Explain that.
Representative Buell.
So that means you have to draw down your reserves to make up the difference. You're projecting over 7%, but you're capping at 3.4.
We will be negotiating for 2017. We will negotiate down to the 3.4% in some way. Yes, we have in the past every year.
It might be helpful to kind of talk about what those negotiations look like.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And to expand on that a little bit, it was the composite rate was within the 3.4%. It was our costs. So the amount of costs that our members are incurring in the self-insured plans are above the 3.4. We don't have any control over that. That's member disease burden and utilization of services. So that part is above our 3.4%. But the composite rate, the budget amount, is within the 3.4%. As far as the negotiations, what we have in our toolkit is we have plan design. We can change the co-payments, the deductibles, the out-of-pocket maximums. We can, of course, push back on our vendors and find different ways that we can save money, such as maybe a narrower network, something like that. And for us, the last thing we would do is dip into our reserves to stabilize the rates.
Okay.
Please.
So how does that percentage of employee contribution compare to other states' public employee plans?
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, great field members of the committee. It is low compared to other groups. However, that determination does not happen in PEB. Mm-hmm. That is a negotiation that happens between DAS and labor. That is, we don't have anything to do with
that. So would you say that it's one of the lowest in the country?
I'm sorry, I can't say that.
Could you get back to me with that?
Sure.
And just kind of, I wanted to follow up with the initial kind of strategic plan, the goals, it says hold growth at 3.4%. Mm-hmm. So growth, and I just want to clarify, that's growth of the composite, not actual cost of providing health care. I misunderstood what was going on, or just don't understand what you said.
Okay, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, did you want to jump in, or you want me to go?
You go.
Okay, so it would be both. The costs are what actually drives the composite rate. Mm-hmm. So the 3.4% budget number is the composite rate, but we do strive to keep the cost at 3.4%. It is more volatile. We do not have as much control over that as we do over the composite rate. So.
Okay, and so okay. With like kind of CCOs trying to, you know, stay at the 3.4% and mm-hmm. are able to kind of achieve that, I mean, when you compare yourself against that type of a model, how are you performing? You know, relative to folks that are already staying at the 3.4.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I would say a lot of the we do have a different population. We do have a lot more members that are, like I mentioned earlier, in a preferred provider network, which there's no controls. They can see any provider that they like. We have in and out of network benefits. So if you choose to see a provider that is not contracted with the vendor, there's still a benefit that is paid. We have members that live all over the country and internationally, and so we pay for services that are provided in Paris and Massachusetts. So we do, and we also have pay for services below the line that CCOs do not pay for.
You say below the line.
So we pay for back surgeries, total hips, total knees, other surgeries that are high cost surgeries. So we are different. We're a commercial line of business, and so we do have some differences when compared to the Medicaid population.
So your answer, the growth rate, though, the reason your growth rate is higher than compared with kind of the CCS, why you're not able to cap 3.4, is because you have greater exposure in terms of the type of services you provide, and then in terms of you have, and I would assume this would only be a minority of people. It's not like all of our teachers and public employees moved to Europe, right? So there's probably only a minority of folks living outside of the U.S.
Actually, we have kept our growth rate pretty stable. This year, we did see a spike at the end, and it all happened in the last quarter of 2016 that we jumped up.
Yeah, I was just trying to get the difference between the CCOs and why they're able to do one thing, and what are the differences that, you know, kind of like they kind of keep you confined a little bit.
So. I think one of the a very large thing that helps CCOs is their provider networks are narrow, that they contract with a certain number of people of providers. They don't contract with providers across the state and pretty much everyone across the state. So when you have a narrower network, it also gives you a lot more controls over costs and performance within the network.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, and before we move on, I just thought I would recognize the Ashbrook Independent School in the back who just came in, and Jonathan Pugsley.
My friend first.
Senator Gelser's favorite before, I guess, myself. Is that the way? Senator Gelser, would you like to introduce them?
Yes, he's my favorite before you.
Okay, all right.
But then you're my second favorite.
Okay. I appreciate
okay,
that.
Okay, this is getting weird.
Yeah, at least we fully embarrass them. So everybody, if you would just turn around and wave to Ashbrook Elementary. There we are. Okay. With that said, thank you for bearing with me. Please continue.
Okay. So once the payrolls have all the money, they send it to our treasury account. Oops. And then PEB reconciles the money, and we distribute it to the premiums, go to the fully insured plans. We have the money from the self-insured premiums that we use to pay for costs. And we also have money that is 100% employee money that we distribute for optional benefits. We pay for the health engagement model for people that have chosen to participate. We do have a portion that we keep for our operations, and if there is any extra, it goes into the stabilization fund, and there it sits. That's the easy half of the equation, pushing it out. We do have a few major program changes. The Governor Brown issued Executive Order 17-01 this year, and this requires PEB to hire a wellness manager. This wellness manager will facilitate and staff a statewide council to work on worksite wellness. They'll be working with individual agencies, safety and wellness committees, helping them come up with 2 to 4 projects that they could be working on. The manager will be offering evidence-based worksite wellness technical assistance. We're rolling this out in coordination with the Public Health Department because they have a department dedicated to worksite wellness as well. And the PEB Member Advisory Committee, which exists, we have been working with them also on this project. A few things that we changed last year: we removed deductibles for in-network outpatient mental health services, making that more accessible for members. Our plans, our vendors that met the 3.4% increase were rewarded with the ability to expand into different geographic areas. Our medical plan contracts now include the outcome metrics that are in the CCOs. There's 17, we do 15, two of them don't apply to our medical plans, one being the sealants for teeth and the other medical care for foster kids in DHS custody. And we have been capping our growth at 3.4%. This next slide shows the migration of our members from a traditional PPO-style plan into a coordinated care model plan from 2014 to 2017. You can see that we've slowly been making progress. The CCM plans have premiums that are lower than the PPO plans, so every time we have a higher enrollment in those plans, we see our overall costs decrease. Our key performance measures have to do with customer service. Employee helpfulness was 86% of the respondents felt we were good or excellent. Knowledge, again, 86%, good or excellent, and our overall score was 85%. We hope to improve that year over year. Okay, moving on.
And actually, when you say year over year, what were the prior years?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't have that with me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So now we'll talk about the Oregon Educators Benefit Board. So this is their board. They have school boards, representation, labor unions, superintendents, local governments, and then they also have a couple of policy experts. So they have a much more broader representation on their board than the PEB board does. We serve school districts, educational service districts, charter schools, community colleges, local governments, and we have a couple of special districts that we also serve.
Yeah. Representative Bueller.
Who's your acting administrator for OEB?
I am the director of OEB.
In my understanding, the previous director left. Can you shine light on that situation?
Yes. Co-chairs, Representative Bueller, members of the committee. Yes, we OEB had an administrator from December of 2016 through November of 2017 when he resigned. At that time, I became the acting.
Must be 15 to 16.
15 to 16. Thank you.
Sure. Time travel.
Flex capacitor.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Exactly. I'll start over. From December of 2015 until November of 2016, at which time he resigned, I became the acting director for a short period of time, and then was am in the process of being direct appointed into the position as putting the as the joint director for PEB and OEB. We had a joint director for years, from 2008 until 2015, and then the boards were split and had separate directors, and now we're going back to a model where we have a single director, and we're working to mesh the staff throughout more than we have in the past.
And the media, maybe rightfully or wrongfully, has been critical of the vetting that OHA did with regards to the hiring of your predecessor. Has processes changed at OHA? Were you vetted in a different way than your predecessor?
She may not be in the position to answer that question.
Yeah, that's an HR
vetting
question.
Herself.
Yeah.
Would
you like someone to contact you on that?
Well, she's the director of the organization.
Can you tell me how the voters decided to hire you?
No, I think that this is serious. This is accountability, and this is hiring someone at a salary of $125,000 to oversee a multi-million-dollar organization, which is being routinely criticized by the districts that it serves. I think it's very pertinent, and especially when the Fourth Estate calls out the process that OHA underwent. So I think I don't think it's
a good question.
I don't think
it's the wrong person to answer the question.
Yeah, I don't think it's funny. I think it's serious.
No, we're not disagreeing with you.
Yes, I have been the director of PAB since 2014 and served as the acting administrator for both PAB and OEB for a year during a transitional period before the James Rawson was hired, and then again as an acting. I do not know what kind of vetting was done. I've passed all my background checks and have been working with OEB or with PEB since 2009 as the deputy started as the deputy. So I've just been moving up. As far as the vetting process going for people coming in from the outside, I cannot speak to that. I'm sorry.
Right. If you could get back to me, that'd be good.
Sure. I'll have someone from the HR department contact you. Okay, so here are the people that we serve. As you can see, the majority of our members, 86% of them, are from school districts, and then 15% from ESDs and community colleges, and the very tiny sliver there from local governments and special districts. OHB has the same operational budget as PEB. It's 1% of our total budget. OHB has a stabilization fund that they maintain for premiums and self-insured claims and stabilization premiums. They currently do not self-insure anyone, and their reserve is not large enough for them to venture into self-insurance in any sort of big way. So all of their plans are fully insured plans. Like PEB, 100% of their budget, $1.7 billion, is 100% other funds. So OEB's medical plan highlights, like I mentioned before, 100% of our plans are on the OEB side are fully insured, not self-insured. They offer primary care visits with low copayments. They also have lower copayments for the same chronic diseases that I spoke about in on the PEB side. They promote chronic care self-management through better choices and the diabetes prevention pilot that's out there. We provide preventive care at no cost, of course. We work with local, regional, and national purchasers to expand our value-based benefit design. I talked about that a little bit earlier, too. And, of course, all of the out-of-pocket maximums are well below the federal maximum that, in the ACA. One thing that OEB has that's kind of different than PEB is they have a work group called the Strategies on Evidence and Outcome and Outcome Work Group. They meet and talk about different evidence-based practices that exist. They use information from the Health Evidence Review Commission and also OHSU Center for Evidence-Based Policy. We do an annual or a semi-annual high-level update on all utilization so that we can track where areas are going up and see if there's a way that we can help moderate that through plan design changes as we move forward. These are PEB's core or OEB's core benefits. We have 4 statewide PPO plans, 5 coordinated care model plans, 3 regional HMO plans. The statewide plan and the CCM are offered through MOTA. The regional HMO option is Kaiser. We also have high deductible health plans that qualify for health savings accounts. On the pharmacy side, we have the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, and then Kaiser has their own pharmacy. In most cases, for core benefits, like with PAB, OEB members pay a portion of the premiums, and employers pay a portion of the premiums. With 247 or so entities and all of their different groups, such as licensed, classified, and we do not track what each school district has for a contribution on the employer side.
Yes, Senator Gilzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me a little bit about your RFP process for how you chose which companies to bring in for the coverage? That's another question of concern that's come to me from my local school district.
Sure. Chair, Senator Gelser, members of the committee, we just finished an RFP, OEB did, for medical, pharmacy, and vision benefits. It was a pretty rigorous process. It took about a year to get through. The finalists were interviewed, and decisions were all made by the board. It was a very open process. The development of the RFP was very open. The RFP concentrated on coordinated care models and ways that to help contain costs. Although we did continue, the final decision was to contract again with Kaiser and MOTA. It's not really a status quo renewal. We're ending the contracts we have with them now and starting fresh. We have. The RFP included rate guarantees going forward for a couple of years. So we're very happy to be able to actually start with a clean contract and start from the beginning again.
Can I follow up?
Please.
Thanks. So the concern that I'm hearing from my school district is that the financial status of the RFP respondents was not made public. I think there was especially some concern about MOTA. Is it possible to get the analysis of the fiscal health of all of the respondents that participated in that RFP process?
Okay. Sure.
Thank you.
One of the things that OEB has in their enrollment and eligibility system is a program that for decision support for members. They can log in and make, if they'd like to, it's actually part of the system. It will guide them through a series of questions to lead them to the plan that would be best for themselves and for their family. Cost-wise, we all know that people make decisions for insurance for reasons besides just cost, but it is one of the tools that we have available.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Senator.
I just realized I had one other piece of that question. Is it true that MOTA has the contract, but it does not have an AM Best rating, and we've put our school districts into that?
Mm. Co-chairs, Senator Gelser, yes, I believe that's true. They do not have that high of a rating.
And given that, what follow-up?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the thought process that went into that, and what would you say to a district that is concerned that they're paying more money than they should be, and that they now may be in with an insurance company that has had some pretty significant fiscal problems in recent years, does not have an adequate rating, and they can't access the process that you used to decide that was okay?
Thank you. The access, we have a public records request. Get any information that your constituent is interested in. We can disclose everything except for trade secrets. So if you'd like to give me the name of the person, I'd be happy to help with that if you'd like to get that information out. As far as the rating goes.
I think less than a response to that particular constituent, I think that's a matter of public interest probably to all of the districts that are kind of subject to that contract. It seems like a pretty basic piece of information that should be available to the stakeholders in the process. I certainly think it would be worthwhile to have that information for this committee, and especially to understand, given the high-profile nature of the problems with MOTA, I think it's understandable that's created some significant anxiety among the school districts that, because of the structure of this, really have no other choices.
Sure. Well, we can put together some information explaining how MOTA got where they are and where they're going, and the board's thinking behind why they chose them.
Yes. And can that come pretty like within the next week, or what are you thinking in terms of timeline?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Okay. So for our dental plans, we have five called indemnity plans, meaning copayment or deductibles and co-insurances. We have those are from through Delta Dental managed care plan, which is Willamette Dental Group, and then the HMO plan is Kaiser. Their employee assistance program is provided through Reliant Behavioral Health, and these premiums are also shared between the employer and the employee. OEB offers optional benefits. These are paid entirely by the employee in most cases: life, accidental death and dismemberment, long and short-term disability, and long-term care. They have a health savings account, flexible spending accounts, commuter accounts as well. This just shows, again, the migration on the OEB side of our members out of the PPO plans and into CCM style plans. Every time somebody moves into a coordinated care model plan, it helps control our costs as those premiums are lower. OEB has the same metrics that PEB does embedded into their contracts so that we can track the improvement in quality as well.
What are you guys doing trying to incentivize more towards a coordinated care model? Obviously, if that lowers costs, I assume that's we're seeing a trend that way, which is great, right? But what actions are you taking that's kind of helping that trend along?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, we don't take a lot. We do advertise the benefits of being in a coordinated care model, the fact that you have somebody that is invested in your care and access to a tighter coordination between primary care and the specialists. I think that a lot of the movement is related to the employer contribution, that if that shrinks, then people begin to look at different plans so they can keep their budgets the same.
Is there a reason why we haven't taken an active kind of role in trying shifting people more into the coordinated care model?
Well, we do advertise and try and push it through our open enrollment meetings, but no, there is no reason why.
Okay.
No. We think it's a great idea.
Okay. Representative Bueller.
Thank you. Have you done any financial modeling of cost savings if OEB has transitioned into the CCO structure as the original intention of the healthcare transformation outline?
Co-chairs, Representative Bueller, we have not. We have our coordinated care model plans on PEB and OEB are all CCOs, participate in a CCO. The coordinated care model plans on OEB are the MODA Summit Plan, which mirrors the Eastern Oregon CCO, and they developed a new CCM down the valley that they call Synergy, but it's the same benefit, or the same structure as far as relationships between the providers.
Please continue.
All right. Here are OEB's customer service results. 83% found their helpfulness good or excellent. 83% found their knowledge good or excellent. And 81% found that they, the quality of service was good or excellent. OEB had a very difficult open enrollment this year. This was a year where we collapsed plans. We reduced the number of plans available to members, which required that all of the plans be renamed. So we did have a pretty active call center during the open enrollment process as we went through. And I do believe that that had an impact on our kind of low rates that we'd like to increase. And we also got the new phone system that we all have now, and we did have some issues with that, figuring out how to use that as a call system program. So hopefully next year we have reviewed all of the comments that people have made and have come up with some ideas on how we can change our communication style and actually materials to improve on our scores going forward.
Please, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Co-Chair. On your call system, do you subcontract that out, or is that done internally?
Co-Chair's Representative Hayden, that's it. It is the state phone system. Okay. We do not contract.
You don't call. You don't subcontract out to other.
Okay. No. Thank you. We have staff internally that answer calls, and we use the phone system that through the state. Okay. This is the last slide. Major budget drivers and risks. We do have some environmental factors. The escalating cost of care out in the industry is impacting our premium costs. And our move to self-insurance alleviated some of the rapid rise on the PEB side, but we have introduced more fully insured plans, so we're holding okay on our self-insured percentage, but we lost a little bit to the fully insured plans. We are trying to use the patient-centered primary care home and the CCM model to help contain our costs. We have implemented the additional cost tier to increase member participation in cost of care. We added benefit designs that reduce barriers to care for members with chronic diseases and to decrease the downstream costs of emergency rooms and hospitals.
One of the questions I kind of have is, like, you know, the workforce, you know, you mentioned like an aging workforce, you know, kind of what the mixture has been, say, like over the past, you know, 10 years, and what we're kind of projecting over the next 10 years is kind of the, what does that workforce look like? How does it shift? Does that change the risk pool? Are there, you know, kind of expected you know, trends that we might see increase? Obviously, if the workforce is aging, we'd expect to see things, you know, change one way or another. So,
yeah, co-chairs, members of the committee, PEP's average age is 46 for a subscriber, and I think it's about the same for OEB. They might be a year younger, a year older, mm-hmm. but we're both right around the mid 40s, and you do, there are increases in disease burden as we age, so we have seen that. We have our age span on the PEP side ranges from like 18. We have employees that are in their late 70s that are still working, and same on the OEB side, so it's a big band there.
Does that number stay static, or does it fluctuate up and down over time?
It has been static. We have been around the 46, 47 age group average for years. So we have a very stable workforce. We don't have a lot of churn of members coming in and going. Any other questions?
Any questions? Representative Alonso Leon, I know you're It's been quiet all committee.
I do actually, Chair, Co-Chair, I do have a question, but it's mostly around, because the slide number 8 around the obesity status. So my question around that is, so we have data on obesity. What other data do we have around what other ailments are state employees and people who benefit from PEP and OWEB? This is one data analysis. What other information do you have? And of the population who is identified here in this, just for example, under the slide on the obesity status, how many of them are actually taking advantage of the programs you mentioned? You know, like the, what did you call it, Weight Watchers and so forth? Because that's, I think, interesting for me to know how, if our state employees are taking care of themselves and are truly taking advantage of these services, because I think it's important to know.
Co-chairs, Representative Mazzoleon. The study asks a variety of questions. It asks about smoking, tobacco use, all sorts of things. We just provided a slice here. I'll send the full report. So we keep track of that. As it turns out, PEB and OEB members are really good about getting their preventive care and things like that. We're above average on that. I can tell you that as far as taking advantage of the programs that we offer, we do have we have data on that, how many people and the costs. We can I can roll that up into a chart and get that back to you as well, rather than read off.
That would be great.
20 of these things.
Thanks.
Okay.
Please, for Representative Hayden and then Representative Ostrom.
Thank you, Co-Chair. We've seen a lot of percentage comparison here and kind of an aggregate of the 1,400 per month for your average member families. I haven't seen a comparison between the actual cost of the, so you compare to the commercial as far as the commercial market or the open market that they could go buy on if they were allowed to, and some school districts can. I haven't seen a comparison here in your analysis of what that commercial rate is, what that commercial monthly cost is on the open market. Do you compare to that at all? You compare percentages, so you must know what it is. Like the commercial is going up X percent, and yours is going up X percent, and your self-insured is going up X percent. But what are the total numbers there associated with those for the commercial market?
Co-chairs, Representative Hayden, I don't have those numbers in front of me. We can pull those numbers on the PEB side. It's hard to compare. We have what would probably be considered a platinum plan as far as the benefit design goes, and there isn't. We could compare us to a gold, but it wouldn't be a straight across. But we could come up with some comparisons if you'd like us to. You're interested to know.
Yeah, I would be interested. It's been follow-up.
Please.
It's been testified, and I don't know if it is accurate or not, but it's been testified if the plans went directly into a CCO, like Dr. Bueller mentioned was the original design, it could save up to 30%. Now, those are two different plans. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I would be interested more in an intermediate step of allowing the education K through 12 or higher education, if they were allowed to go out and purchase their own on a statewide basis, what that comparison would be on dollars, not percentages, but dollars.
Okay, a comparison to the commercial, not to CCOs.
Right.
Okay. To the marketplace. Okay.
Representative Malmstrom.
Thank you, Chair. One question I had is regard both with PEB and OEB, as far as incentives for people to work on a lot of chronic health conditions, say like obesity. Like if during that year, you know, you've lost 10 pounds, you get some sort of incentive. Or if you stop smoking, there's an incentive. Incentive-based things that might give them a little reward and lower your rate, you know, keep them healthier longer. I know other health plans, you know, do that. I'm wondering if that's been something that's been tried or would be considered.
Co-chairs, Representative Malmstrom. So for the tobacco, we have a stick. We don't have a Carrot, members pay a $25 per month surcharge if they use tobacco. So if they quit using tobacco, that would be there, and they get a bonus there. They get $25 more in their paycheck. As far as we used to have a, on both sides, we had an exercise rewards program. So if you went to the gym, you got payment. But that is administratively almost impossible for us to administer due to the way that the IRS requires us to pay taxes on the incentive. So we took that away. We have never looked at, of course, PEB, we would have to do it through the plans because PEB and OEB do not do any sort of collection of personal health information such as weight or disease, anything like that. But our plans, we have not looked into that, what it would add cost to the overall program in the beginning.
So that would be a cost to the program rather than a savings? I mean, if there was an identified health risk and they lowered it, that would cost the plan?
There would be an outlay. Usually with things like that, the benefit is seen a little bit later. But we can look into it. We can look into what any other. There are wellness programs out there that do just that.
Right.
Yeah, that you you pay a per member per month to enroll in those. And everybody has a different return on investment.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. With that, I don't see any other questions. And Ms. Ames tells me there's nothing else on the agenda. Is there anything else you guys would like to add before we adjourn today?
No.
Are you sure?
Thank you very much.
All right. With that, and Director Loretz, I just want to make sure that you know that none of the children from Ashbrook and Pellin Elementary fell asleep during your presentation. So you must have done something right today.
Thanks.
So with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn.